I'm a federal prisoner. I guess that's how I'm viewed by the state now, and that is where I'm at. I've been in prison for 20 years. I'm in prison for shooting a police officer, and he died. So I'm serving a life 25 sentence, and like I said, I have 20 years in. Is that the kind of thing you're...
Whatever you want to share with people is fine.
I'm just a person trying to survive a long prison sentence and stay sane.
Thanks for being on the show.
Was it difficult to set up this interview? Are you allowed to do these types of things frequently? Or
I don't think it's something that they're allowed to legally stop. I think that they would prefer someone who's going to say some things that are friendly toward the system. And I really don't have a lot of things positive to say about the way they're running corrections. So in that sense, I don't think it's supported by the system. But given our country's Charter of Rights, we're allowed to speak in theory.
So maybe we can, we'll come back and talk a bit more about the prison system in general, and maybe even talk about some of the similarities that you see between the institutions around animals and then the institutions around people. But first I wanted to talk with you a little bit about your perspective on animals and animal issues. So I was just curious how you got involved with thinking about animal issues, and what type of animal activism have you been involved with in the prison system?
Well, I think ever since I was a kid, I had a connection with animals, and that may have been just, I don't know why, it just was. So, I've always loved animals. So when I found myself in the prison system, I used to, often find baby birds that had dropped out of nest. You know, in the spring, you find them a lot.
Yeah.
So my sister would photocopy pictures, pages out of, I think it was a furred and feathered guide to rehabilitating injured animals. That's not the title, but it's something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would use that to try and, rehabilitate the birds and get them back on their feet, so to speak.
Right.
I didn't have a lot of success with that, but my further research into that indicated that not many people have a lot of success, even if they're trained veterinarians, because generally after birds have fallen, there's internal trauma, so not much you can do from a prison cell, let alone...
We just interviewed a group a couple of weeks ago on Animal Voices. It's called FLAP. It's the Fatal Light Awareness Program, and they just basically, in the mornings in Toronto, they go around and pick up birds all over the place. It's amazing how many birds are dying and being traumatized.
Right.
And banging into glass windows
in the business section,
yeah,
of Toronto.
That's great, though, that you've
been able to help some birds anyway.
Up until I got to here, I'm having less success at this institution because of administrative ignorance, I guess. Ignorance surrounding West Nile virus and, how it's contracted and things. Yeah, so those are some of the things that I was doing. I've also rescued a couple of turtles. I didn't find them, but someone found seagulls lifting them and dropping them to try and break them open, little baby turtles. So they brought the turtles to me because I guess a lot of people know that I just take care of animals if they're hurt or whatever. So I built a couple of aquariums we're allowed to do glass painting here. So we have glass, and we made some aquariums, and I had them in there. But recently the warden said that I had to get rid of them because she was afraid that salmonella would permeate throughout the institution and kill everybody, I guess.
Oh.
Short of licking the turtles, I think you're pretty much safe,
Yeah.
So is that what they usually say when you're trying to take care of these animals? Is they say that they're afraid that they're going to carry disease?
Yeah, that's a pat response. It's almost a safe thing to say. You can pretend that you're actually doing it for the good of all mankind when really the motivation would appear to be to stop someone doing something that they enjoy or doing something positive.
It reminds me in a way of trying to get a tour of a slaughterhouse or a factory farm, and they tell you, no, we're afraid of contamination and that type of thing. It's an excuse.
Right, sure it is. Absolutely. I had bought... double water filters, charcoal water filters. I changed the water regularly. I had, bought turtle conditioning blocks. It was a very clean, nice environment for them. I had built sort of a potting plant, sort of like a patio for them to come out of over a log, and it was a, pretty elaborate little venture. We ended up sending them through my family to a wildlife sanctuary here, and and they've released them into the wild, so that's a much better place for them to be than here.
Mm-hmm.
I had them for a couple of years, so it didn't occur to me at the time to send them to a place. I didn't think any place would take them, you know, or there was any place around here. So anyway, they did it for the wrong reasons, but it ended up better for the turtles. So.
Right. So I'm just anticipating for maybe some people who are listening, questions around, or maybe confusion, that a prisoner would even be able to interact with animals. I think that a lot of people have this idea that if you're in prison, you're basically just staring at a wall. Can you give us a sense of kind of what your day looks like? Or are other people allowed to interact with animals too? How much time do you have to do things like this?
It's a difficult question, and not. I'll just say most prisons don't have the environment that you would run into the amount of animals you do at this institution. This institution's sort of an open, you know, like you don't walk down long hallways, you walk down a road.
Okay.
You know, it took me 18 years to get here. All the other institutions before this, they were high security, you know what I mean, like high static security, you know, gun towers and gates that you couldn't get through, and you had to wait for someone to push an electric button to...
Yeah.
So we're in a place that has a lot of land now, and I suppose in theory it's to decompress you after you've been in a cage for a couple decades. Would that be about right?
Yeah.
That's what they say it's for. And I would have to say that the atmosphere is dramatically different from a, you know, a higher security institution.
Yeah. So yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because being in prison for 20 years, I guess you've seen different institutions and probably had different reactions to you caring about animals and your diet. You're vegan, right?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that too, maybe? First, how have different institutions that you've been involved with in some way, how have they reacted to your animal activism and your veganism?
Well, as a matter of course, you have to hide that you're helping animals, because they will, you're not allowed to. You know, so it becomes a sort of a covert activity to take care of something.
Wow.
That's just the response, right?
Yeah.
But that's not to say that all the staff are like that. Some of the staff call me and tell me when there's a bird injured near a fence, you know, got caught in the barbed wire and is on the ground with a broken wing, and I'll go and get it. But then there's other ones who will, you know, just step on its head, right?
Yeah.
In some cases, that may be the best thing for the bird, given the type of injury that they have. But, you know, I don't think they put a lot of thought into it before they do that. They do it as a matter of course, right?
Yeah. What about your diet? Can we talk about if you've been able to have access to vegan food and what your food options are like?
Well, when I came in originally 20 years ago, the whole idea of people not eating the food that they were preparing on the assembly line was reacted strongly to. You know, they put a lot of effort into discouraging you. So a vegan diet to them would have been taking the meat off the tray. You know what I mean? Like, so that was the approach 20 years ago. Since then, they've had some problems with human rights issues and things, you know, not respecting religious beliefs.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Is it different if you say that you're choosing this diet because of religious reasons as opposed to saying for ethical reasons?
Well, it used to be. It's not now, because someone brought them to court and forced them. The courts forced them to respect ethical choices.
Hmm.
But that was only 9 months ago.
Wow.
Before that, they had to respect religious diets, but respecting religious diets in theory is different from respecting it in spirit. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
What they would do is, what did they do to me? They would get somebody to come in and say, because you're Buddhist, you follow this person's diet. And they would get someone who was willing to rubber stamp their decision that you could eat milk or you could eat cheese or you could eat fish, because that particular sect of Buddhists did. So then you have a choice to either refuse to eat that and starve, or violate your principles and eat it.
That sounds unbelievably frustrating.
Yeah, it would be frustrating, and sometimes you go hungry.
Have you just been sort of deteriorating? I guess over the past 9 months you've probably been doing a bit better, but has your health really suffered?
Maybe you've misunderstood something there. I've been vegan because I was following the Buddhist faith.
Right.
someone else brought them to court on ethical grounds, and they won that. So I haven't been starving for nine months.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I got a little bit confused then. Good. So you've been, your health has been all right then in terms of getting everything you need in terms of your diet?
Oh, I don't want to go overboard there. That would be exaggerating the case. Since I've been in, they've tried to force me off my diet three times. They've tried to, at three different institutions, and starved me down 20 to 30 pounds in a number of weeks. And it required legal intervention, you know, letters to the parliament, family, writing, and complaining. And in each instance, healthcare just stood idly by. But what they did do was would weigh me weekly to document the weight loss. They would eventually come around and go, okay, you know, they would start feeding me back, giving me beans to eat and vegetables and fruit and stuff. But they don't give me B12 shots or allow me to buy B12 vitamins because they don't believe in vitamins. They don't believe that you need to have the vitamins. They think that their diets are fine. We eat a very unvaried diet for vegans. Oh, like it's always chickpeas, kidney beans, basic vegetables, and now they've cut out citrus fruit, canned peaches, pears, and pineapples, and the only fruit we ever see are bananas and apples.
Are there other guys that are vegetarian or vegan?
Yeah, there's a couple, but the majority, I think, would be Muslims whose diets are varied.
I just wanted to back up for a second. On Animal Voices, I think one of the things I try to do is cater to a bunch of different people in terms of the things that they know about. And I know that a lot of our listening audience is animal rights people or people who have a concern for animals in general. But there's also people who just sort of tune in and maybe don't know about these issues. So if we could just maybe do a description of what veganism is and then why you're vegan, that might be helpful for some people.
You want me to tell them what veganism is?
Well, my understanding, my definition that I go by is it's a diet, firstly, that excludes any animal products. So that includes things like milk and cheese. And some people don't eat, you know, the little ingredients as well. And then for some people also, veganism is about sort of a greater lifestyle choice, about just doing as least harm possible, not wearing animal products,
right,
not buying anything or consuming anything that's been tested on animals. So that's kind of the definition that I go by. But it can mean a lot of different things to different people, so.
I guess you can blur the lines, but pretty much that's what veganism is to me. You know, you're not killing animals for food because we don't really need it. You know, you're not contributing to the suffering of, you know, so you're not, you know, drinking the milk of cows that are being housed in atrocious settings just so that we can milk them, right?
And how long have you been vegan for?
20 years, but over the 20 years I've actually had to things that I didn't want to eat because of the circumstances, you know?
Yeah.
So between dying and still eating food that I didn't want to eat, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Within the institution where you're at, is there an option to talk about these issues, to have some kind of dialogue with staff and other guys that are in the institution about how, you know, your philosophy about animals and how you feel about these issues? Is there a chance to kind of debate with people and talk with people about these issues?
I suppose to some degree there is and there isn't. I don't spend a lot of time talking to people about my beliefs. I don't push them on other people. And for the large majority of the population, they don't follow these things.
At this point with your sentence, how constrained are you in terms of your activism? Is there things that you wish you could be doing in terms of your animal activism that you haven't been able to? Or are you in the point right now where you're feeling generally pretty good about the types of interventions and the types of things that you're able to do? Or is there sort of other directions you wish you could go, but you're just not able to right now?
You know, prison has somewhat restricting qualities about it, so obviously there's things that I would prefer to do, you know, or things that I would like to do, but I, you know, I'm paying a debt for something that I did a long time ago, and obviously that has to be settled before I can do something else.
Yeah.
I wish I had the forethought and was able to guide myself when I was younger, but I didn't, so now I have this situation to deal with.
Have your politics changed a lot since you've been in this institution, or just you're serving your sentence in general?
I like to think I've smartened up a bit,
yeah.
But yeah, sure they have.
Yeah. What about access to resources? Are you able to get your hands on alternative literature or any kind of radical stuff at all? What about news? Like, are you able to access those resources?
No, not really. I don't, you know, if people send me things, I have access. Like some people send me some of the alternative news that comes out of the internet from people going to demonstrations and things like that. I have a cousin who's actively involved in animal rights in Great Britain. He's always in trouble over it. I do try to do things in here. Like I said, I try to feed the birds and take care of the birds, you know, throughout the winter, make sure they've got water and things like that. And I try to sign up for, I've forgotten what the name of the university is. They do the feeder watch.
Okay.
The Cornell University does the feeder watch program. Okay, anyway, they have a feeder watch program where the idea is to count the birds that come to a feeder during the day.
Yep.
You know, and that way they're hoping that people will send back that information and their research teams can try and track and estimate the damage West Nile's done to bird populations as well as what our industrial impact has done to bird populations and migratory patterns and stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I tried to sign up for that and the warden won't let me do that because, I don't know, she's... Like, obviously, her field of expertise isn't animals, if she has one. Throw that in. She thinks that if I put up a bird feeder, that birds will come from everywhere, bring West Nile disease,
yeah.
And the guards and the prisoners will all get West Nile. So she actually wrote that in a... She also thinks that the bird droppings create an unsafe environment and will make the roofs collapse. I'm not making that up. I can send you the letter.
Yeah.
I don't know why I brought that up. Just to let you know the sort of atmosphere that you're working against. So in my limited capacity, anything that I try to do is shut down, right?
Yeah.
I know from experience talking with people who are serving time because of animal rights related, or for animal rights reasons, I guess, for, you know, doing break-and-enters or whatever kind of stuff, that there's support groups out there for them in terms of, you know, just animal rights support groups and helping people get vegan diets in the States and that type of thing. Are there people that you can access then that can help you out with, you know, struggling around these issues? Or is there ways that people can, you know, write the warden and try to help you out so you can help these birds?
I don't know. What I've done is I wrote to the Ministry of Health. And I pretended that I was a, you know, an irate homeowner who's offended that my neighbors had been putting up bird feeders and that I was afraid the whole community would catch West or if I could charge them for having brought these feathered pestilence-carrying creatures into the community and, you know, endangered everybody. And so they wrote back to me assuring me that, you know, that I was off base. And I've sent that letter to the warden asking her what her opinion is, since her opinion seems to vary from the ministers of the environment. So that was the only thing that I could think of to do to try to show her that off base.
I guess you got to get creative, eh?
Yeah, well...
Yeah, that's awesome.
If you're comfortable, I wanted to talk about some of the links that you maybe see between prisons and the institutions that animals are in. To me, it seems like they're definitely linked in a bunch of different ways, you know, in terms of controlling behavior, in terms of surveillance, in terms of just regulation. Do you see parallels or similarities between prisons and, let's say, factory farms and maybe vivisection labs? Do you see any connection there?
Well, yeah. I'm not sure the vivisection labs, although in our very recent past, we've done some horrendous things to people under, you know, the heading of corrections. But certainly the institution that I'm in is more like a trailer park with a couple of big security fences and armed guards going around it than a penitentiary in the traditional sense. So, you know, not referring to this, the other penitentiaries are certainly... The circumstances that people live in are disgusting. I think, actually, that we wouldn't be able to keep animals in some of the conditions that we keep people in, you know, given the current set of laws that we have.
Yeah.
So maybe for people who are a bit unfamiliar about what conditions you're talking about, can you describe some of those?
23 to 24-hour lockup in a cell that you can touch the walls with both your hands. It's smaller than a small bathroom. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people just are unaware, and I count myself among them, and just in terms of what really goes on or what those conditions are actually like within the high security places right now. I think that there's more awareness, my sense anyway, there's more awareness about what the American prisons are like,
yeah.
but less awareness about what Canadian places are like. Even with my own researches on factory farms and slaughterhouses, I find that often people will think, well, Canada isn't so bad, and I think that that's, in general, people think Canada isn't so bad about a bunch of different things. So it's important, I think, to talk about what Canadian high security places are like.
Well, yeah, it all comes down to the way you treat any animal, whether we're talking about a human being or, you know, a dog or whatever. Any animal you mistreat is not going to respond well to that, right?
Yeah.
So the way we treat people, I'm not saying that we don't require some kind of prison system, because clearly some people, you know, when 20 years ago when I was running around being an idiot, clearly prison was a good option from a social point of view. I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that we need to have prison for certain people, but currently we're just putting people in prison for too many things. You know, someone's a drug addict, so off they go to prison. You know what I mean? Like some kid stole a car, so he's going to prison, and we're just turning out emotionally crippled people from these places.
I think, too, just again with my limited understanding of how maybe the media or public sometimes will view people in prisons, especially people who are serving long sentences, is that they are animals. So it's lock those animals up. I think it says a bunch of different things about how people think about people who have committed crimes or allegedly committed crimes and the way that people think about animals. It seems like by calling people animals, it's a way of justifying what we do to them in prisons.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think we do that. I think what's happened is our media sort of not glorifies but really dramatizes and brings to the forefront the horrendous crimes and link everybody who's run afoul of the judicial system to these horrendous crimes. I think what happens is we look at Bernardo or Clifford Olson, and it's such a horrendous set of circumstances, and people are so afraid and so outraged by it that it's easy to somehow link everybody to that type of behavior and be afraid of people. And I think prisoners now are the only set of people that you're allowed to discriminate against. You know what I mean? Like, it's politically okay to discriminate against us,
yeah.
Right? We've made a mistake and a horrendous one, and it's just to be able to... Yeah, that's not a good thought.
No.
I didn't finish that.
No, I see where you're going with it, though. One of the things that strikes me, too, is that, you know, at the beginning of the interview, you were talking about how there's fear around you helping these birds, there's fear around you helping these turtles, and to me, these are things that would seem very, you know, life-supporting. It would be something that would help generate compassion. It would, you know, a prisoner showing kindness towards animals, I think, is the exact kind of thing that I'd like to see happen, and it seems ironic and really sad that those types of things get stripped away from people when they're taking that kind of initiative.
Yeah, it is. All research points toward animals being introduced into any institutional setting, whether it's an old age home, a psychiatric unit, a hospital for sick kids, or a prison, a young offenders facility. All evidence points toward it being healthy and, you know, encouraging all the positive things that can come from humans. So, yeah, it's really sad. It's a sad commentary on corrections, right? But like I said, I put a lot of effort into overcoming those kind of obstacles. Like last year, a cat had killed the parents of a swallow's nest. So I got up there and raised them up till they all fledged. Well, actually, almost all of them. They killed one of themselves because they had gone for a period of a day or two without any food before I had found the parents on the ground.
Yeah.
So I guess in their competition for food, they had done one of themselves in. So anyway, so I got five of them and fledged them. I even got pictures of them before they left. But and also pigeons. We have a wood shop here, an industrial wood shop. In theory, it's to teach people good working skills so that they can get out into the community and get a job. Things that they would do at this wood shop, the staff would take nail guns and shoot them at the pigeons that were attempting to roost and raise families in the girders of the facility. So what we would do was try to rescue them, the babies, before this could happen, before they could be killed. And so we rescued three of them that way. I actually raised them, but I'll tell you about that after. But when I found out about the nail gun eradication tactic,
yeah.
I wrote a letter to the warden, and I told her I'd heard this was happening, and, you know, I would like her to resolve it, that I didn't want to go out of the institution. I didn't want to get anyone in trouble. I just want the practice stopped. And I told her I'd give you a week to write back to me and advise me that you stop. So before long, I got a letter back saying that they had contacted the Ministry of the Environment, Ontario, and under some section it said that it was all right to harass, trap, or kill any animal that was infringing on any human industry or compromising their buildings or property or whatever, right? I don't know if you're aware of that. So
yeah.
I wrote back and I said, well, regardless of what section this is in, and I pointed out that they didn't tell me what section they were relying on. I pointed out that this is a federal reserve and not subject to any provincial regulations, but also that I didn't think that it was legal to shoot animals with a nail gun, regardless of what they're saying. So I contacted the Humane Society, and the Humane Society came out here and investigated it and told the institution that, one, they're not allowed to destroy the nests of roosting birds,
yeah,
and that they have to go through certain procedures to do that, to remove birds that are roosting.
Yeah.
Two, that they're not allowed to shoot birds with nail guns.
Right on.
So the very, actually, 3 or 4 days later, that was when the memo came around saying that I had to get rid of my turtles.
Really?
Yeah, that was absolutely the time frame, was exactly then. And following that, they said that I wasn't allowed to feed birds because they were afraid of West Nile and blah, blah, you know, all that crap. The roofs will fall in.
You mentioned that you were able to take care of some of the little ones for a while. Can you tell us about that?
The little baby swallows. There's also a black cat that lives here who killed the swallows, the parents.
Yeah.
What happened there was some staff member had brought a black cat in to kill the mice in the power plant. But the cat had figured out that she could get a better deal in the living units of the prisoners. You know, she could get better food there. So she would always run away from the powerhouse, and the guard would come looking for her and bring her back, and then she'd run away, and then she'd... So it was a back-and-forth thing like that for, I guess, about 6 months until the guard just gave up. So she actually adopted our living unit, and she's sleeping on my bed right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We called her Egg Roll.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
She is a nice cat, but she's not friendly to birds and that.
No.
But, you know, there's nothing you can do about that, right?
No, there isn't.
Like, I try to keep them separate, but when she's outside, she's outside, right?
Yeah. I just heard some amazing stories about people putting these collars on their cats with bells on, so the bells will scare away the birds. But the thing is, the cats are so ingenious that they figured out ways of making the bells stay quiet, either crouching along the ground so it's muffled, or putting a paw over the bell. Just so they can get at the birds.
I would just say, while we're on the line and there's people listening to this, it's very dangerous to have a collar on a cat because as they go under fences or in little things, if it gets caught, they can strangle themselves.
Yeah.
But we don't put a collar on Egg Roll, and if anybody's putting a collar on, they should make sure that it'll break off.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. What do you think about the quick-release collars?
Well, yeah, so long as it works. So long as the cat doesn't end up dangling from some place because it, you know, it panicked and then pulled harder. And so anyway, she doesn't have a collar, and the birds have to fend for themselves.
Right.
And that's unfortunately what happened to those two, the parents of the swallows. But I guess I got a good entrance-level view of how voracious these little guys were. You know, like I would be out catching bugs and mashing them up with the steak and, you know, actually wasn't steak, but rump roast.
Yeah.
The cook here gave me slabs of that, and I would just make like a mash out of it, and I sanded off tweezers, so I had the rounded tweezers.
Yeah.
And I'd be feeding them incredible amounts of meat and bugs, and just grew so fast. Anyway, so then I built a aviary for them, but I tried to buy screen, but they wouldn't let me buy screen, so I had to find screen. So a lot of the buildings around here don't have screen anymore.
Yeah. Hey, again, you got to be creative, I guess.
So they can figure out how to fix their own windows and deal with the West Nile.
Right on. So you were talking about right at the beginning of the interview, you've been in prison for 20 years, and you're saying, you know, just trying to keep yourself sane. I would imagine things like taking care of these animals, doing the things that you're doing, that this would help out. Have you found that it's been something that's helped you keep grounded through this experience?
Yeah, sure. It's great to have some positive impact on, you know, a bunch of little lives.
Can we talk about maybe some things that you'd like to see be different in terms of the prison system, maybe in general, and then maybe in particular for people, other prisoners who are vegan or other prisoners that are trying to do things for animals? What kind of changes would you like to see in the prison system? How could things be better in terms of those issues?
Well, it's a really broad question.
Yeah.
It's a very closed-minded system. So I think the system needs to reorient the way they're looking at people, just the way, you know, like you can see our zoos today, the more modern zoos are taking a more intelligent approach to captive animals, from what I see on the television anyway. You know, I've been inside for a while, but I remember back in Calgary, they were making moats around their enclosures as opposed to having these animals in little cages. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's changing different places in different ways.
Okay, but it would appear to be being a more intelligent. Like, I can remember my parents bringing me to the Watertown Zoo and just thinking, geez, how can you do this? You know, like you see these pathetic animals, their coats lackluster and just their whole attitude was just, you know, they were in jail, right? They were on concrete. There was no natural, nothing, no simulated natural environment even. So what I see, and, you know, I guess you guys would know better, is a more intelligent approach to that.
I'd like to think so. I mean, I think that some things are changing. I think zoos are definitely promoting themselves more as sort of conservation parks, which is interesting they use that language. But there's some places like Marineland and stuff that just they have terrible conditions. You know, they have bears and deer there that are just in really barren enclosures, and people can come and, you know, feed the bears marshmallows and stuff like that. Like, it's, I don't know, too, like, there's so much it's so difficult with animal institutions to even sometimes evaluate because you're not really able to see behind
the veneer.
So it's like things might look better on the outside, but what's happening to those animals at night or, you know, how are they being treated? There's so much misinformation out there. It's really difficult to even find out. You know, the shows that we've done on vivisection before, it's so frustrating to even find out what's going on in these places. You know, how can we begin to have some kind of debate and create change when we're just struggling to find out what's actually happening, you know?
Yeah. Then exactly the same thing with the correction system. Like, CSC put out so many lovely glossy documents about what an enlightened approach they take to corrections, and, you know, in reality, it's all just propaganda, right? Like, they reassign words to make the things that they're doing sound more palatable to the public, but nothing's changed except the word.
Yeah, it really obscures what's going on.
So I think we're probably going to wrap up the interview in the next couple of minutes. Wanted to make sure, too, that I'm not the only one who gets to guide the interview. So can we talk about maybe some things that we haven't touched on that you think are important to talk about, if I've missed anything or any kind of closing comments that you have?
I don't know what's important, but I did want to tell you about the three pigeons that we were able to rescue from Gorkhan, the nail gun thing.
Okay.
I don't know if you're aware of how difficult it is to feed pigeons.
No.
It's incredibly. The mother has to put her beak down and put food in the mouth. No, they go up into her mouth and take food. Anyway, you have to do this little dance with them, and it's a big fight just to feed them, right?
Yep.
So for like a year, I had these young ones and raised them, and then, you know, they took to me like I was their mother, right? So they would leave in the morning, and they would go flying around and come back at night. They'd come back to the window, and I'd tap the side of the window, and they'd fly in. But I'd wait till the guards were gone.
Yeah.
And they'd come in, and I made this part of a tree. I put on the wall that's against the door that they look in through. They look in every hour to see if you're there and alive and not doing something illegal, like taking care of animals or something.
Right.
And so right beside them, they didn't know for a year there'd be these birds sitting there, and they'd just be waiting for the next day when they could go out. So that was funny. I had a giggle over that.
Yeah, yeah.
long time, because they actually used to come searching for the birds, because there's informants and stuff in these places who tattletale about any little thing to curry favor and that. And there's certain guards who just hate to see you doing anything. So they'd be coming around looking for these birds, but the birds would never be around during the times that they'd come, because they were out doing what birds do during the day, right?
Yeah.
So that was funny.
Yeah. Thanks for being on today.
Yeah, thank you.
I really appreciate it. It means a lot to me that we were able to hook up the interview.
Yeah, why not?
It's important, I think, to get your perspective out there.
Thanks.
Thanks.